A few weeks ago, I was preaching here, and I promised that I'd preach a series titled People That Jesus Met. My anticipation of that sort of being on a casual roster where we were rostered on at different times, my expectation was that I'd finish that series in about 3 months. It looks like we might be getting that done in about 3 weeks now, so that's all going to happen a bit quicker. But I'm not preaching a sermon today, and I'm sorry for that if that's your expectation. I thought it might be a good idea if you got to know me a little bit. So I'm just going to do just a little run through over the last, 28 to 33 years, if you like. I am going to be brief, but this is probably a little longer than I would normally speak for, so just relax, and no snoring, please. According to my bio, when I was ordained into the Baptist Union of Tasmania, I was born to missionary parents, which was of great surprise to my dairy farming parents from Nathalia. We were very ordinary people growing up on a farm, dirt poor. We had enough to survive on. We had lots of work to do. But I loved growing up on the farm. I was never going to be a farmer, but I loved those formative years in my life and the open space. I'm the fifth of six kids. It was interesting that Michael has said often he's the fifth of six kids, and we're going to catch up, we're going to compare notes at some stage, but in some ways I felt like I was a bit the forgotten child. The baby was always the spoilt one, the one after me. Everybody else was grown up. My oldest brother was 12 years older than me, so they were quite older, and they were men in my eyes as I was growing up, and they worked hard on the farm too. My family is what I would call a nominal Christian. They were at that stage. Now, what I mean by that is that if you do a survey around Australia, lots of people believe in God. I think it's still about 75% of people believe in God, maybe more than that. So my family, my parents and us kids, we believed in God. We went to church at Easter and Christmas. And we also went to church when the milking season wasn't so busy, which was probably about 6 to 8 weeks in the middle of winter. And then occasionally we would go to church apart from that. I always had a belief in God. I guess maybe that introduction to church and being dragged along to church, that sort of stuff. But I always believed in God. I always believed that there was somebody bigger and better than everything else out there somewhere. I can remember many times in my childhood and my teen years looking up at the sky, and we're talking about country Victoria, we're talking about no bright lights, there's nothing to hinder the view. And I remember looking up into the sky over those years on the farm and just marvelling. In my heart I was marvelling at what God had made. Psalm 19 verse 1, which is a slide, and I'm in the 21st century now, so I have to turn that on. I have to press the button. I think I want to go back one. No, not there. It doesn't matter. Psalm 19, verse 1, the Bible, it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And that's exactly how I felt as a person who believed in God, but that was about it. I didn't know much else about anything at that stage. My earliest memories of church was some very old minister droning on and on and on up the front of the church. Thinking back, he could have been 63 years old, but... To a young boy, he seemed pretty ancient to me. We would go out to Sunday school and in a huge, huge church hall, and my lasting memory of Sunday school was of how cold it was. It was absolutely freezing going out to Sunday school. It was so cold that I can remember sitting in Sunday school with lessons, and I wrapped up in blankets that we'd brought from home, and I remember on a couple of occasions we had a hot water bottle at our feet to keep our feet warm. Anybody remember hot water bottles? Yeah, they are the precursor to electric blankets, but that's what we had. Now, I did have a couple of photos that I wanted to show you. So, where is that one? Have I pressed the button? There we are. That's my mum and dad in all their splendour. I still remember driving in that car. We used to get 8 of us into that old Dodge. And my seat was on the parcel rack lying across the back row on the back window. That's a fact. That's our dairy farm. That's me, the little one, and my older sister. And we're checking out the new calf there. That's me and my younger sister. And we're playing with the chickens. I'm not sure if the chickens survived, but Lots of animals on the farm was what farm life was all about. So that was our working dog. Every year she had puppies. She had 15 one year, 15 little border collies. Beautiful little pups. That was my little baby animals was my joy, and they still are. When they grow up a bit, they're just a nuisance, but anyway. Tractor holds many memories. That's how we got around. Went everywhere on the farm on the tractor. Dad would sit up on the seat where I'm sitting, and I would sit on the mud guard over the top of the wheel. Not very occupational health and safety, but we never even heard about that in those days. But that was my seat. And when I was with my dad, I felt like the king of the world, just sitting with my dad. My dad was a man of few words, but just that connection with him was everything for me as a little kid. That's our swimming pool. My older sister's got, she's wearing something, but I'm not sure that the other two of us are. But that was trying to keep cool in 40 degrees up in the Murray Valley. A little bit older, I think I'm about 13 there, round about, and that's my little fox terrier. It was my dog, and she'd had pups as well, so that's what we're holding in our hands, not very clear. That's me at about 15, I think, thereabouts, had a brand new bike, and somebody took a photo of that. That's my dad in the background wearing his uniform, gumboots. If it was summer, which it is there, he had shorts on and a shirt. If it was winter, he had long pants and a shirt and a jumper, and sometimes they got washed. But what's the next one? Yeah, okay, we had that. We'll leave that up. So that was my childhood. That was where I grew up. As I said, very fond memories of all of that. Now, I have to say that as a kid, I would probably, if I'd been born 40 years later, I probably would have been diagnosed with ADHD or something like that. I was a very, very lively kid. My older brothers, I competed with them. They'd be kicking the footy around. Well, I'm only this big, but I had to grab the ball. I had to get it. They just used to throw me out of the way so they'd get on with their game. But I had that much energy. I think I used it all in about the first 25 years, so I haven't got a lot left these days. So I love sport, but I love watching it. I don't do anything with that much. So with this very lively kid, this hugely lively kid just running, I used to run everywhere, run all around the farm. I'd be chasing the animals and all sorts of stuff. It would be fair to say that I didn't like church much. I hated church. By about 10 years old, I'd worked out a little trick to not have to go to church. As I said, it wasn't very often, but when I found out that we're actually going to church that Sunday, I had this little trick. On our farm, we had an irrigation channel. If anybody understands that whole of the Murray Valley and all that sort of stuff, like a creek that ran through our property. And there was plenty of fish in it. And I loved fishing. And I think I was the only one in the whole area that ever caught any fish, because everybody else's channels, they ran through everybody's property, and our channel was the last one in the line. It stopped there. So all the fish used to migrate and sort of flow the current, and they'd end up in our channel. So I loved fishing. It was fantastic. Now, when I realised that we were going to church on that at any particular Sunday, I'd take my fishing rod and I'd go fishing down in the channel. And the channel ran parallel to the road into town. So everybody else is fussing around at home. They're getting ready to go to church. And Dad would pick everybody up and get in the car, and he'd come along and they would pick me up. In the car, Mum would call out, "Have you caught anything yet?" And if I said yes, she'd say, "Oh, he's caught something, Dad. Let's just let him keep fishing." Now, I didn't ever lied. So if I did, I did. If I didn't, I didn't. Off they'd go to church if I'd caught something, and I did not have to go to church. And that was fantastic. Now, I have to say that those times of fishing at that point in time, that was the high point of my prayer life. Because I would pray, "God, let me catch a fish so I don't have to go to church. God, please, can I catch a fish so I don't have to go to church?" Now, I'm not sure of the theology behind that prayer and how all that works, but you know what? Sometimes God was good. Sometimes God was very good and I didn't have to go. Needless to say that by about 13 years of age, I'd stopped going to church. I just said, no, I'm not going. I didn't stop believing in God, but I just hated going to church. By 18 years of age, I wanted to see the bright lights of city living. I'd had enough of the farm. The farming life wasn't for me. I wasn't going to become a farmer. So I wanted to see the bright lights of city living. I left home and I went to live in Launceston, which wasn't very bright lights in city living, but that's where I ended up. I've told you the story, or most of you heard the story before in one of my sermons, that of my mum kissing me goodbye at the airport, and she said, make sure you go to church. And it was out of that commitment that I did. I went to church. Maybe I was lonely or whatever it was, just, and I think the providence of God, that this is what my mum wants me to do. I hadn't been to church for about 5 years, but this is what my mum wants me to do, so I'll do that. I'll go to church. So I went to the same denomination that we went to at Nathalia, and it still bored me brainless. Just absolutely bored me brainless. It was no different from when it was when I was 13. I'd had enough of it. I didn't want to be there. I wanted to do other things. Now, I was living in Launceston. I was boarding with a family who went to a different denomination. And keeping this really, really short, they invited me to go to church with them. And that transformed my life. In the tradition that I grew up in, just thinking back along all of that stuff, and I may have this wrong. I'll apologise to people who've gone before me, and this isn't true for them. But in that tradition, it seemed to me that the people who went to that church, they knew about God, which is where I was. I believed in God. I knew about God. I knew about Easter, and I knew about Christmas. So I knew about God out there somewhere. But when I went to this other church, this other denomination, it seemed that the people who went there personally knew God. It was a whole different story. It was a whole different kettle of fish. And I'd never experienced anything like that before in my life. Church was happy. People liked going. God wasn't a theory. He was real. Worship was joyful. People talked to God, so people would pray, and it was just talking to God. It was just a conversation with God. And they would talk to God about their joys and their sorrows, and they prayed knowing that God was listening and expecting God to answer those prayers. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved going there. I loved being there. I loved being involved. And as I said, that transformed my life. One day, a few months later, after that experience, I said, I'd been going to the church for a few months, and the father of the house, the place where I was boarding, he sat me down and explained the gospel, which I had never heard before. Maybe I had, but I wasn't interested. I was switched off already and nothing sank in. Maybe I had, but I don't think I ever heard the gospel growing up. In short, just keeping it really short, he said it wasn't enough to just believe about God. He said that you have to let him into your life. So that's just a really short explanation of what he told me at that time. This man then led me through a prayer of inviting Jesus into my life. He asked me if I wanted to do that, and I said yes. And he led me through a prayer. Those of us been used to church for a while, sinner's prayer. Just repeat after me these phrases. If you want Jesus in your life, just repeat after me these phrases. He would say something, I would say the same thing. He would say something, I'd say the same thing. Now, in that moment, a number of things happened as I did that. Firstly, I became oblivious to everything around me. Completely oblivious to everything around me. I burst into tears. I felt something like a weight being lifted off my shoulders. And I heard God say, you will serve me in ministry. All of that was happening, completely oblivious to anything else that was going on. I sort of think about the Apostle John and Revelation. I said he was in the Spirit. Now, I've often thought, you know, if I ask you, what does it mean to be in the Spirit? I'll probably, you know, 100 people here will probably get 100 different answers. I think for me, that was what was going on. I think I was just in the Spirit. Nothing else mattered. God was speaking into my life. I don't know if that took minutes or seconds. I couldn't tell you that, but that's what happened to me. I don't think it was an audible voice, but in that moment, just the presence of God, with stuff happening in my soul, I just had the overwhelming sense of God's call on my life. Now, in the church that I loved going to, it didn't hurt that there was a beautiful curly-haired young lady that I forget from time to time that was attending that church. And we got friendly, and we got a little bit more than friendly. Our relationship grew. We got married, and we moved to Hobart. I left my job in the bank, which is what I've been doing. That was why I went to Tasmania. I left my job in the bank, which I hated. Hated every day of it. Once the novelty of being paid wore off, I just hated it every day since then. With all apologies to those who work at a bank. Just wasn't for me. I got a job in selling real estate, and I absolutely loved that job. 2 years into that job that I loved, after having about 6 or 7 years in a job that I hated and prayed every day, God, take me out. The sense of humour of God within 2 years of the job that I loved, he took me out of that. And he said, now's the time to move into ministry. To do that, I need to do some training. So we packed up our house in Hobart. We moved to the Bible College of Victoria, which is now the Melbourne School of Theology. As I said, I was probably ADHD when I was a kid. My two favourite subjects at school were recess and lunchtime. And heading off to Bible College was a mixture of excitement and absolute terror because I had no idea how to study. Kath did the first year of Bible College with me. The purpose for her doing that was to teach me to study. And she sat, we had our own little dorm, our own little room, and she sat at the desk there, and she made me sit at the desk there. And she said, do not move from here until I say so. And she said, open that book at page one, and away we went. It was as basic as that to try and get my brain into gear and start doing what God had called me to, wondering how on earth this was ever going to happen if I had to do an academic course. I loved those studies. I lapped up every word from the lecturers. I sat in the front row so I didn't miss anything. And little by little, I got the hang of it. And in the end, I did quite well in my studies. As I said, Kath did the first year of the course. She was a star student, so much so that when she told our mentor at the college that she wasn't continuing the studies into year two, he begged her to keep going. He never begged me. I'll think about that a little more, but he begged her to keep going. But we needed some income while we were there, and Kath took on those duties of working to support us at college. One of our subjects was church history, which I found fascinating. We just looked through a brief view of church history and significant things. I sort of like history. I'm not an academic, so I don't study history and stuff like that, but I like history. I'm sort of really interested in just stuff that doesn't happen anymore and what's happened then and sort of how it relates today. I like that. So I really enjoyed church history. And we were swatting for an exam, which was on the next day. Kath's there, I'm there. Kath slams her books down. She said, I don't understand any of this. Well, she probably said it a bit nicely than that, but I calmed her down. I explained the main points. We did the exam. I got a very creditable 75%. Kath got 85%. And she's never let me forget it. So if you've got theological questions, sort of deep stuff that you want answers to, up the back. If you want to talk about fishing and camping and footy, I'm your man. During my time at Bible College, God was shaping my calling. At college, we lived on campus. There was quite a few of us lived on campus. Other people would come in for the day. But we'd have a meal after the lectures. We'd have lunch. So that was all set out in the dining room, and all the students were allocated tables. So you didn't get to sit with your friends and that's become your little clique. You had to sit where you were told, where you were put, so you got to talk to everybody and got to know everybody. One day I was sitting at a table and all the others on the table were degree students. I was doing the diploma stream. After the morning lectures, it was normal, you would eat our lunch and then you'd talk about the lectures that you just had, you know, we're just regurgitating it all and, you know, this is what I learned and what do you mean by that and all this sort of stuff. So that was pretty normal as we ate our lunch. Now, at this point in time, I'm 2 years into my studies. I'm doing quite well. I'm sitting at a table of degree students talking about their lectures and I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I do not have a clue what they're talking about. Now, remember what I said before, sort of in the spirit, this is happening when I've given my life to Jesus. I'm sort of oblivious to everything else that's going on around me. I'm just fully aware of God. Well, I had exactly the same experience right at this point in time. I'm just becoming aware. I have no clue. I'm trying to join in the conversation, but I didn't know anything about what they were talking about. I became oblivious of everything around me again. Again, I don't know if it was an audible voice. Nobody said anything afterwards that they'd heard anything or anything like that. Maybe it was just an overwhelming impression of what God was laying on my heart. But he clearly said to me, loudly and clearly, he said, "Your ministry is to reach ordinary Australians." Clear as a bell. You see, if 2 years into theological study, I can't understand a conversation that's going on, how on earth is the average Australian supposed to understand anything of faith and God and the Bible if that is how we speak to them? So I don't use big theological words, even though I know them. I actually work hard on trying to keep the complex and the deep and the eternal and those things of our faith that sort of theological words have been made up so that we have a word to describe it. I work really, really hard just so that we can understand the deep things of our faith. I once had somebody say to me, "You don't have much theology in your sermons." Used to be a friend, but not anymore. My reply was, a bit cheeky, "Yes, I do. It's just cleverly disguised as something interesting." Every time we talk about God, it's theology. Theology's just, it's the understanding of God. So if we're using words this long for to describe our understanding of God, well, that's theology. But if we're using words this long that everybody else can understand and we're not using the big words, it's still theology. It's the understanding of God. It's the study of God. And that has been my ministry since day one. After college, God led us back to Tasmania and I started my ministry as a youth pastor. My overwhelming thought was, how do I help these kids find Jesus? So I would try something and I would get into trouble from the leadership for it. I think, oh, well, okay, I'm not supposed to do that. So I'd try something else, I'd get into trouble, I'd try something else, I'd get into trouble, I'd try something else, I'd get into trouble. That was my first church, pretty much. Then I was invited to attend a Rick Warren conference. Some of you will know him. Some of you will be aware of what's termed seeker-sensitive ministry. If you don't, that's okay, it doesn't matter. But Rick Warren was a pastor from the States who started a church from scratch. And at the time that I went to hear him speak in Melbourne, 30,000 people attended his church every weekend. And I heard that man say, I heard that man tell everyone who was in that audience, "This is what I do." And he listed off all the things that I was getting into trouble for in my church, and it was like dominoes falling, chunk, 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 and I went, aha. I think I'm on the right track. I think I'm being faithful to God's calling on my life. And if he can do it, well, I can have a crack at it as well. So that was my ministry from that point on. That's kept me busy in all of that. I set my sights on helping average Australians understand faith. And it's been an absolute delight that over those times, three churches, 28 years when I was in full-time ministry, that in being able to do that, I've seen a lot of people, quite a lot of people, come to faith in Jesus Christ. The delight of my heart. It's my passion. Never in a million did I think God would use me to do those things when he called me to serve him in full-time ministry. Never, ever did I think that God would use me in that way. But he did, and that was my 28 years in ministry. Now, I'm just going to ask the band to come up, if you can come up now, if that's okay. And just while I finish off with a couple of little things. So what about the last 5 years, I guess, is the question. What happened? After 28 years in ministry, I was pretty cooked. I like to think in my own mind that I could see burnout coming and got out. Once I'd actually stopped in ministry for a while, I realised I was a whole heap more burnt out than I thought I was. And I reckon it took me 2 years to recover. I'd intended to take 12 months off just to try and regroup and refresh, do something different, clear my mind from all the stuff that sort of had become all cloudy. And I'd intended to take a year off, and that turned into 5 years. As I said, I thought at that point in time that my ministry life was over. As I said before, I sort of felt a little stirring. I didn't quite know what that was all about and what was going to happen and you know, what this stirring to get back into ministry. As I said, I checked out a couple of things, but pretty quickly realised that that wasn't right. It wasn't for me. I did promise to God that I wouldn't be an old bloke at the front of the church going on and on and on and on, driving people away from church. I'd told my bosses that I was going to retire at the end of the year. So at the beginning of this year, I told them that I'm here for a year and then I'm going to retire. But God had other plans. And here I am, an old bloke, going on and on and on and on and on. I'm not perfect. I'm a pretty ordinary sort of person, but I do my best to love and serve God. And I guess that's my promise to you today. I'm just going to keep continuing that. It's a different role now. I'm just going to continue to love and serve God. And I'm pretty excited. Just over the next 6 to 12 months, it's an interim period. Who knows what God's got in store after 6 months, but at this point in time, it's a 6 months, and then until we find somebody else to be our permanent ministry team leader. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to what God's got in store for us as a church together, where he's going to lead us, what we're going to do, and how we're going to experience him in our lives, in our service. So let me finish. I just want to read Psalm 100, verse 5. Can you flip that up? I think I've lost track of this buzzer. I'm still in the 20th century. I've got another century to go yet. Psalm 100, verse 5. For the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. And as I look back on my life, it's not a life verse, but as I look back on my life, that is so true. God is good. His love endures forever, even when I'm stupid. His faithfulness continues through all generations. And we're in this generation, we only get to live one generation. And his faithfulness is right here amongst us as we go forward.